Hello, everyone, and welcome to RE Radar. I am your host, Nathan Matheson. I'm also a realtor at John L. Scott here in Seattle. RE Radar is meant to be the one-stop shop for buyers, sellers, and just anyone interested in real estate. If you want to just learn a little more, maybe you want to think about getting an investment property. This is the ideal spot for you to be, as RE Radar is meant to inform everyone about real estate and the complex natures of it, and try to make it a little easier to understand for people, to allow them to succeed at whether that be purchasing your first home or selling your home. So this is episode 2 of RE Radar. On episode 1, we cover some really good topics. So if you missed that episode, head on back and check it out, because I think it'll be worthwhile. But for now, here's episode 2. And episode 2 is going to be starting off with the question of, how long will it take to sell my home? Now, this is a wonderful question. This is a question that everyone should be asking their agent. And this is a question that isn't the easiest to answer. And one of the reasons not the easiest to answer is just because it depends on so many different factors that I can't give you an answer for you, but I will give you a more general, broad answer and give you a few things that you can do to help yourself in selling that home. As the answer to how long it will sell will depend on factors such as what the market's like at the time, your location, the style of the home, the condition of the home, a number of other factors. Some factors people might not even think about, like a floor plan. The floor plan can affect a home, as buyers might not be thinking about floor plans originally, but when they start touring all these homes, you start to notice how each different floor plan could have its pros and could have its cons. So to kind of get to answering the question of how long it will take to sell your home, first I'll look at it very broadly, as really what I'm just going to be looking at is the condo and residential on the market times. Now, for this is in the NWMLS, and if you are watching on YouTube here, I'll have some of these graphics pulled up. So according to the NWMLS, Northwest Multiple Listing Service, in Seattle, in February, the median days on market for a condo is 16 days, while the median days on market for a residential home was 7 days back in February. Now, from a basic level, what does that tell me? It tells me just that people in Seattle might prefer a residential home over a condo. So if you're trying to sell a condo, it might take a few more days than if you were to be selling a residential. Now, that's not to say a condo couldn't sell quicker than a residential home, as it depends on the condo. If there is a condo in a sought-after location, it's nice, it's good quality, it's attractive, then a buyer will come in and they can scoop it up within a day. That's what it is. Real estate is so dependent upon the specific scenario. And then not only is the condo versus if it's a residential house going to affect how long it can be on the market, another huge factor is the interest rates. Interest rates will be a huge part and how long a home can sell, as if interest rates are at a very high point, then the market, it usually will be a slower market simply because less people can afford to buy. Now, let's go back to January 2021, where interest rates hit 2.65%. During those super low rates, a lot of people could buy. So houses were flying off the shelves. People were buying them up left and right. As just to pull up an example here, a $800,000 home at today's market of about 7% interest rate, your monthly payment of that would be around $5,900. Back it up to 2021, a $800,000 home, 3% interest rate, that payment is $4,100. So that's about an $1,800 difference with that 4% interest rate difference. That makes a big difference, $1,800 a month. And let's just for fun here, for a 3% interest rate back then, to get the monthly payments of $5,900 which is what you'd have with the interest rate of 7% in today's market with a $800,000 home. To get that same payment at 3% interest rate, the home you'd be able to afford would be $1.15 million. That's a little bit of a nicer home than an $800,000 home. So obviously, interest rate is going to be factored into sale time as it affects the amount of buyers available. And thus, with higher interest rates, when especially with higher priced homes, there aren't as many buyers available, so your home could sit on the market for longer. Then, say interest rates were lower, it would be easier to sell as more people are able to afford it. Now, you might be sitting there thinking, well, nothing I can do to that. I mean, it's interest rates. I don't have any control over those. And that's where you'd be wrong. As just like new construction, and construction often does with paying the lender money up front, a seller can do the same thing with a list and lock, where they will buy the rate down by paying the lender up front. It'll be just a percentage of the total payment, as the total payment to get that buy down will then just be taken off of what you finalize with the sale. So you aren't paying a huge chunk up front. It's a small percentage. Now you'll pay that up front, and then the lender will be able to lower the rate so any buyers can get that low rate. So instead of perhaps a 7% interest rate, you can buy down the rate and get it down to a 5% interest rate, which then will bring more buyers to your home and could potentially cause it to sell quicker. Now, obviously, it's not just that simple. There are a few finer details where something like doing a list and lock you'd want to really check with and make sure it's your best option, as there are a few things you want to understand before actually jumping into it and doing it. And I'll be getting eventually a lender on here for one of the upcoming episodes, and she'll be able to tell you even more about the list and lock and get into the nitty gritty finer details of how it all works. Now, moving on from those interest rate talks, we're going to just get into another factor that can prevent homes from selling quickly or can cause homes to sell quicker, is the condition of the home. Now, if you listen to the first episode of RE Radar, you know that I talked about a lot of things for what you should be doing when you want to list your home. And with all that stuff, with doing the painting, cleaning, changing out some lights, some stuff like that, when your home goes on the market, I feel that it should be in a better condition than when you were living in it. And if you manage to achieve that, if you get your home in a better condition than the time when you were living in it, it will sell quickly, or at least it should, I believe, sell quicker than had you done nothing to it. Now, an example of this, a real example here, is back in February, a broker at my office had a listing, and what they did to it is they fully refreshed the kitchen before putting it on the market. They did a few other things. So they fully refreshed the kitchen. They changed out all the appliances, new countertops, new cabinets, new backsplash. They then also put in new flooring throughout almost the whole house. They changed a few lights, changed the fixtures, painted the walls. And what happened? For the first open that was held there, over 50 people showed up. It then, within a week of being on the market, had gotten over seven, I believe, offers, over seven or around seven offers. And it was under contract then with the sale price of around $100,000 over what the list price was. So really what I'm doing here is trying to help you guys out. I'm not just blabbing about useless information. What I talked about week one of RE Radar, if you do that, you can see the benefit to that, like that example I just told you guys. I'm just really hammering down here for this segment about how it depends on a lot of different things for how long it can take to sell your home, but there are things you can do to improve the chance of your home selling quicker. Now, every home's different, so what you do will obviously depend on what type of home you have and a number of different factors. Now, I'm talking to you here on a podcast, But if you're talking to a realtor in real life here, and if you've got an agent and if you're trying to sell your home, then they should be able to give you a much better analysis of how long it will take to sell your home, as what they should be doing for you is creating a comparative market analysis. A CMA has a number of different listings on it. It's going to have active listings, pending listings, sold listings. Then it also should also have expired listings. And those listings aren't just random houses. They're not, why would they compare your place to them? They're going to be looking at homes that are, or properties that are similar in terms of location, size, number of bedrooms, number of bathrooms, garages, everything about your home. This agent who is creating that CMA for you should try to match it as closely as possible, as that will then give you the best and most accurate guesses as to how long your home might take to sell, as well as the price that you should have your home. So if you are currently selling your home and you were never showed a CMA, or you don't know what I'm talking about right now, then you should probably reach out to your agent with some questions. So next up, I'm going to transition over into the second question that I'll be tackling today. And that is, should I order a home inspection before putting my home on the market? Now, in my opinion, along with my designated broker's opinion, you should always get a pre-inspection report for your home. What the home inspection is going to be looking at is going to be foundation, structure, electrical, plumbing, and HVAC systems within your property. By having a home inspection before the property goes on the market, you're going to be able to uncover any potential issues that arise. Now, had you not done a home inspection prior to putting your home on the market, and a buyer comes in with a home inspector with a inspection clause, then they could come in there and get the inspection done. Then something was on the inspection that they didn't like, something was an issue with the home, then it could be a deal breaker for this buyer. They could be like, all right, I'm walking. I'm not taking the home, because he didn't want to deal with whatever that issue may be. And then this can cause some issues, obviously. I'm sure you all imagine a home when the seller thought they were going to sell it active to pending, and now it goes from pending back to active. That's going to bring some question marks. Potential buyers will always then see what happened here. It kind of stains a home. It stains a listing and can deter buyers and cause that home to sit on the market for longer due to potential buyers being wary of it and not 100% in on it. A potential argument that someone might have as to why you or when you shouldn't do a home inspection is if the seller doesn't have any money to fix anything. You might ask, why would you want to get an inspection done when all it's going to do is potentially find issues? And if you find those issues, then you have the duty to inform all potential buyers about that, because it's a known defect to you now. Why is it that I still feel that it's a good idea for a home inspection to get done, even if that seller doesn't have the funds to do it? Well, the inspector is going to come to the property, and let's say they find an issue. Let's say there's some rotting on the deck. Well, so your seller doesn't have the money to fix this issue. What do? You make your list price reflect that issue that you found. So after the inspector comes out, what you're going to do is you're going to get a contractor to come out to the place. You're going to get a bid for the repairs. You're not going to do the repairs, but you're going to get a bid for that repair. You'll see what it can cost. And then you're going to make your list price reflect that repair that is needed. So let's say the list price was $600,000 and it'll take $15,000 or whatever. So if it's $600,000 list price, it's going to take $15,000 for these repairs. You could list the house at $545,000. And then you make a note saying list price reflects damage to deck, so act accordingly. And this can be a potential way for buyers and sellers also to kind of grow trust amongst, or at least buyers to grow trust amongst sellers, as the seller is being very open and transparent. Now, before we jump into the next segment, I think kind of along the same lines of inspections as doing a sewer scope, I think I highly recommend, actually, I highly recommend that even if your seller is adamant they don't want to do an inspection, you should definitely push for a sewer scope, as sewer scopes can be very costly if there are issues in them, and you want to find that out before those issues compound amongst one another. Now, moving off of those common real estate questions, we're going to jump right into the next topic, which is that random look at a different city in the United States through just a random city finder. And today, I'm going to be doing a deep dive into the real estate market in Long Beach, California. Now, Long Beach is a city people are leaving. It's declining at a rate of -0.68% annually. Back in 2020, the population was 465,448. Fast forward to 2024, that population is 445,253. So they've lost about 20,000 people over the last 4 years. That's a decent chunk of people. Now, the average household income in Long Beach is about 104,000. Poverty rate is 15%. So it's a pretty high poverty rate. Now, even with the population declining, though, and this poverty rate at a higher than average mark, the median home list price is $770,000. It's up 1.4% year over year. So up from last January, because this is January data. And then median sold home price is $775,000. This is a seller's market, which, you know, often when all these people are leaving a place, you wouldn't imagine it being a seller's market. But in this case, that's what Long Beach is. I mean, Long Beach is still a place that people desire and want to live at, even though some people are leaving. Other people are trying to get there and they just can't afford it, I suppose, at this point. And that is keeping in a seller's market with the desire of Long Beach, being on the West Coast, California, beach, nice weather always. Who wouldn't want to live there? And what this I'm going to bring in now is the idea that that brings in renters. A lot of Long Beach is rented out. It's very appealing to landlords because people want to live there. It's a desirable spot, but it's hard to afford. Renter-occupied units make up 60% of the local housing market in Long Beach. In Seattle, that number is just 51.9%. So while people might not enjoy living in California as much, or it might be too expensive to live and own in California, people still want to rent and spend time out there. But based on the data I have here in front of me currently, there were 414 properties listed on homes.com in Long Beach, California. 141 of that 414 properties are single family houses. Well, 123 of those 414 properties are multi-unit investment properties. For Seattle on homes.com, there were 1,285 total properties for sale, with only 76 of those being multi-unit investment properties. Now, pulling up the home I found here in Long Beach, it is a two-bedroom, one-bathroom, 1,200-square-foot home listed for about $790,000. Now, the home was built in 1944, and it appears and is written about, the agent talks about how it's very well-maintained. It was remodeled throughout the years, and then it's just a 10-minute drive to the beach. It's a very nice home, but it's not the biggest of homes. It's a high price. This kind of reminds, I'm sure, a lot of people about a Seattle home that you can get with in terms of the two-bedroom, one-bath going for that high $700,000. I mean, I think that's actually even a little higher than the Seattle market. Alrighty, now moving off of Long Beach, California, we're going to be looking at another city here, And for this city, I've randomly selected Decatur, Alabama. Now, going from Long Beach to Decatur, Alabama, I'm sure we're going to see a different housing market, and that is what we see. Decatur is a very small city in northern Alabama, and in the most recent 2020 census, there was 57,938 people. Now, 2024, there's 58,556. So Long Beach is shrinking and Decatur is growing. Now, the median home list price in Decatur is $291,000. This is as of January. And that's trending up 2.3% year over year annually. Now, the median home sale price was around $270,000. That's a very small number, right? $270,000 for the median home sale price. However, you got to look at it from a little wider perspective and in terms of that region and all that. Back in 2020, prior to 2020, home prices in 2019 were consistently around $150,000. They were sitting $140,000, $160,000 sometimes would be the median home sale price. But that's what they were back in 2019. Once 2020 hit, COVID hit, the interest rates dropped like a rock, and now home prices started rising and rising, and they're still rising here in Decatur, Alabama. And as far as what the market is here, it's a buyer's market. The sale to list price was 97.5%. So homes on Decatur sold for 2.5% below asking price on average this past January. And as everyone can imagine, you're down in the South. What can you get for a home down in the South? You can get a lot of home for a little money. For $490,000, you could currently buy this. Well, actually, you couldn't currently buy this home as I'm looking now. It is under contract, so it is pending. At $490,000, this home was listed. It is a four-bedroom, five-bathroom, 4,253-square-foot, 1990-built home located just minutes away from park, golf course, the Tennessee River. I mean, this home, it started on the market in February, and now it's March, and it is pending. So Decatur, Alabama is a city that is growing. It is in one of the fastest growing regions of Alabama. So if you're looking for a potential investment idea, I mean, maybe take a trip down to Decatur and see it for yourself, as there's a bunch of other factors that will go into whether a area is a good investment city. But Decatur, Alabama, I mean, it's the fastest growing region of Alabama. Home prices are on the move. I mean, it would have been much better to get in back in 2019. But do we see home prices continue to get up to the 500, 600,000 range? I'm not sure. That's something you're going to have to do a whole lot more research for, which I do not have time for on this episode. Is that about does it for RE Radar episode number 2? I hope everyone who tuned in enjoyed it and learned something. And if you ever have any other questions or you ever want something answered or just have something to tell me about, give me a call or get in touch with me and I will definitely be happy to help you out. And I hope everyone tunes into episode 3, as that's just going to be even more jam-packed with some great information. And I am thinking episode 3 potentially will be the first episode with a guest. So stay tuned. But for now, adios.